Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off by explaining away something that I said last week about the coaching market that caused some problems, maybe ruffled some feathers. Then Jenny and Bet come in to break down all eight of the coaching openings. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, we're back. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. Week 17 is in the books. We've got as good a wild card weekend slate of games as I can remember. But I think where we're gonna start today is with what's been in the news the last two, 3 days, which is always in the news after week 17, which is everything that's happened in the coaching carousel. And I want to start with something that I wrote. I think this was probably a week or two ago, on the quality of coaching candidates that are out there. And I think some people may have been reacting, you know, on TV and radio and whatnot to what I put in there, which was I had a couple coaching agents tell me that it was as weak a pool of candidates as they can remember in 20 or 30 years. And I want to explain what I meant when I said that. And I want to explain what they meant when they said that. And what they meant when they said that. And what I meant by extension was there aren't any hot candidates. There isn't the name out there that everyone is after. I don't think there are very many guys where you're going to see them sitting on three offers and they've got to make a decision on where they're going to go. I can remember when Andy Reid got fired in Philly. And that wasn't an interview process with Arizona and the Chiefs so much as it was a recruitment. And we've seen those sorts of things in the past. Like Josh McDaniels the last couple of years has been that way. Sean McVay, once he got into the cycle and once he interviewed with the Rams and the Niners, it sort of became that way with him. And I don't know that we're going to have a single guy or two or three guys this year that are going to be in that position. And I think that that's a good thing. I think that's going to force more teams to open up their process and look deeper into what they want. And I think that's going to force teams to think a little bit more outside the box. I think we've already seen it happen with, again, college names being in the mix, like Matt Rhule from Baylor, like Matt Campbell from Iowa State. Lincoln Riley's coming off the table. He's an obvious name. I think we've seen it with position coaches. Mike Munchak, the offensive line coach of the Steelers. Zach Taylor, the quarterback's coach of the Rams. Now, just because you're seeing more names doesn't mean there's a better pool of candidates. It means that we're turning over more rocks. And I always think that that's a good thing. And so, look, if you want to look at where some of the best coaches, the championship coaches of the last 10, 15 years came from, you can see it. Bill Belichick was an incredibly unpopular hire when the Patriots hired him away from the Jets in 2000. If you want to go back to Sean Payton, he was fired 4 years earlier by the New York Giants. And I don't think the people in New Orleans knew exactly what they were getting with Sean Payton. Mike McCarthy had been the OC for one of the worst offenses in football with the San Francisco 49ers when the Packers found him and they won a Super Bowl 4 years later. Mike Tomlin had only been a defensive coordinator for a single year in Minnesota, been a defensive backs coach in Tampa before that when the Steelers found him. So I'll bring in Bet and Jenny now. Bet sitting in for Connor, who I believe had some babysitting issues this week. Is that right?
That's what I hear.
Is that right? Okay.
So I'm in for Connor. I'll do my best Connor impression.
I mean, look, like I don't think that like this means you can't find a great head coach. Because, like, I don't think it means that you can't find a great head coach. I think what it means is that the hot, obvious candidates aren't out there. And I think that that's forcing teams to do a little bit more and maybe turn over a couple rocks that they wouldn't turn over otherwise to try and find the right guy.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a good thing. You know, I talked to two you know, executives with teams who aren't hiring head coaches, you know, in the weeks leading up. And they said the same thing, that it sort of forces teams to sit down with more guys rather than zeroing in on a target, you know, because this is just the great flaw in the head coach hiring process, is that it happens so quickly. You have to pounce when there is a hot candidate. Everyone makes a beeline and tries to get that person first. And if things were slowed down a little bit, which potentially this hiring cycle could slow things down a little bit, then you can sit down and get more of a feel for, you know, the person who might, you know, be leading your team, rather than just, you know, going in with a clear idea of who you want to hire. That said, you know, there are some different names in the mix, but not a ton. You know, we haven't heard, like, you know, a lot of the college guys, it seems like, are staying put. You know, Lincoln Riley signed an extension. Pat Fitzgerald said that he's staying at Northwestern, right? So, although I don't know the latest on that.
I think with the college guys, you also got to be careful, because those normally come out of nowhere. I remember when the Bucks hired Schiano, when the Seahawks hired Carroll, there really wasn't a lot of chatter about it. Those things happen under the radar because they have to happen under the radar, because it can affect the way that those guys are able to recruit. And so I think that I think there's more happening with the college coaches than people realize. And again, I think there are a couple guys. Now, I think Pat Fitzgerald's the guy that everybody's been trying to get out of there for 6 or 7 years. So, his situation's a little different. I think there are other guys like a Rhule, like potentially a Campbell, like a Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, where it's the opposite, where it's like those guys would be looking to go to the NFL. They just can't make that public, and they can't let that become public because it can affect their performance in their current job.
Also, you have to think about Pat Fitzgerald. Northwestern played in the Holiday Bowl on New Year's Eve, and they beat Utah, and, you know, he was quoted saying, "Oh, go Cats, I'm here forever," or whatever, you know, not here forever, but, you know, I'm here. He's not going to, you know, if you put a microphone in his face in that moment when he's celebrating with his team, he's not going to say, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to go to the Packers."
Yeah. So. Well, actually, Joel, what I was really thinking about was how I could probably get to Green Bay on Tuesday.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just don't think, I don't know. A lot of the college guys have experience doing stuff that you don't see a lot of the NFL, a lot of the NFL guys lack, right? Which is the biggest part of the job, which is running the program, you know? And so where the college guys, you know, you need to make sure they've got the right staff, and are they able to reach older players? They do at least have experience being CEOs, because that's what being a college coach is.
What we haven't seen is sort of what I've been hoping we would see, and I know some coaches have been advocating for, is just the idea of play calling not being the most important criteria, right? There hasn't been an expansion into position coaches who might be good leaders. You know, I know, special teams, Darren Rizzi's interviewing in Miami, but Dave Tobe is out of the cycle. So there hasn't been a ton of creativity. You're still seeing the hot coordinators be the names that are surfacing now. It's an interesting cycle. I agree that it's very different than others.
Right.
And
you said, there's been success stories. Anthony Lynn obviously was a coordinator, but for a very short time.
Less than a full season.
Right,
yeah. Right.
Right, in Buffalo. And then you have John Harbaugh, who was a special teams coach.
Right.
His last year in Philly, he was the defensive backs coach. So there is definitely, there are absolutely success stories out there. Andy Reid wasn't a coordinator. Andy Reid, for as great as he's been as a play caller in Philly and Kansas, he was never a coordinator in Green Bay.
And who was it who said that? It might have been Connor, it might have been Gary, who kept saying that special teams coordinators should get a shot at being head coaches because of what they have to do on a regular basis. They have to be so creative. Oh, maybe it was Bill Belichick.
Belichick has said that a few times because he had experience doing it. Belichick would always say was, because he was a DC for 9 years, I think, with the Giants, and he'd always say, the most important experience I got, or the most transferable job to being a head coach was actually being the special teams coach, because you have to worry about every player on the roster. Mm-hmm. And you got all the things, how much is this guy playing on offense? How much is this guy playing on defense? You had to take everything into account. And it sort of, in a way, taught you how to manage an entire 53-man roster rather than just being in your specific silo. So what we're going to do here, I want to go through all 8 of these. And we'll do it rapid fire. I want you guys to tell me And yes or no, is this an attractive opening? And we'll go through the reasons why and all of that on each of them. And I want to start right here in New York with the Jets. Bet, is this an attractive opening?
No, and because the GM is still here.
Jenny?
I think it's attractive. I think Sam Darnold, it looked, had a good rookie season, and they have a ton of cap space. There's a ton of possibilities to do things. Unfortunately, all of the openings are tied to a sitting GM
right.
this year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's one GM turnover this year
right.
and eight head coach, and that's obviously in Oakland, which where the head coach is right. not turning over.
Right.
So,
and that part's interesting because I think that that's – I don't have as huge a problem with that as a lot of other people do. The reason why is because I think the job of the head coach is to look at the specific year they're in. The job of the general manager is to look out for the franchise over like a five-year period. And I remember the Browns were going through this a few years ago where they turned over their GM like three times in 4 years. And I remember somebody saying to me, it's like, how is anybody going to go in that job and be looking out for the long-term future of the team when they know this guy just fired like three guys who were like at 2 years? Like how could you possibly go into your job and be looking out for the long-term, like the long-term well-being of the team when you know you might not be there for very long? And so I think that that sort of plays into it with some of these. And the other thing, of course, I think a lot of owners are just afraid to blow it up because then it's all on them. It's like the same concept as like hiring a search firm. You
right,
know what I mean? Like
right.
you hire a search firm because then if bleep blows up on you, then you got somewhere to point the finger.
Right.
I think it's sort of the same thing. Like I think some owners are, it's crazy that like these guys who have, you know, billion-dollar bank accounts are sitting there and they're afraid to make the decisions for themselves. But we have so much evidence that that's the way it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do think that the counterpoint is that this year there are a number of openings that you could point to and say, you know, Steve Keim's going into, we'll have his third head coach. Jason Light will have his third head coach.
Yep.
Elway will have his fourth. Now, a caveat, of course, is that Kubiak, you know, stepped down because of health reasons. But still, so there's a lot of situations where, you know, the GMs have had time and then the head coaches were basically working with a quarterback they didn't pick or a flawed roster for
right.
a single season. So I think that is why it sort of is jarring this year. But go ahead with the next opening.
Okay, so well, I'll just say the Jets. Like the one thing I like about the Jets, I think it's got some of the markings of San Francisco a couple years ago where the roster was bad in San Francisco, right? But I know there were a couple of coaches that looked at that and said, well, that's actually a good thing because it's a blank slate. So I can walk in and I can, and I'm not dealing with like too many existing conditions. I can go up and set it up the way I want to. So I think there are some coaches that look at the Jets and say, all right, I've got Sam Darnold on offense. I've got Leonard Williams and Jamal Adams on defense. And then it's just sort of up to me how I want that to look around. And some coaches like look at that as appealing, you know, like that I have an opportunity to build. I've got the third pick and $100 million to spend.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. I can sort of build this however I want to build it.
Speaking of Jamal Adams, seems to be thinking he's Chris Johnson here or something, getting
oh,
involved with the coach and the GM decisions.
I know it. I know
so that
it.
Was a little interesting.
Cliff
yeah,
Kingsbury,
that
right?
tweet
yeah.
was a little bit, you know, just.
I liked how quickly he confirmed that. Like, mm-hmm. like oh, yeah, that's exactly what
that's
I was
exactly
saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. He went all in saying, this is my pick for coach.
Yep. Okay. Jenny, we'll start with you on this one. Cleveland.
I think Cleveland might be the most attractive.
I have to agree with that. Most attractive in Cleveland.
It is the number one job on my list. I think it's a fantastic job.
Yeah.
I think the under 25 talent on that team is great, and it goes beyond just Baker. I think it's like Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward and Larry Ogunjobi and Jabril Peppers and Jarvis Landry, who I think is right maybe 26, 27, but right in that age group. Like, it's a lot of guys on rookie contracts. There's a lot of money to spend. I think there's a competent general manager.
I
think
and you
look at John Dorsey, and if you don't need control, if you're okay with division of power, you know, you look at a guy who is largely responsible for building that Kansas City team, right?
Right.
The one question, of course, is ownership, right? And I know the Bill Parcells would always say this, like the one thing he'd always tell his assistants when they were going and looking at jobs, like, the one thing you can't change is the owner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the one thing wherever you go, you cannot change that. So, like, there certainly be some questions there about, like, whether or not you'd be comfortable with ownership because of all the turnover over the last 6 or 7 years. But the rest of it, man, like, the chance to work with Baker, the young talent on the roster, the money to spend, it's all there.
The Browns also ended this year on such a good note that you want to be a coach coming in there and to coach these guys who are feeling good and feeling optimistic, and things are generally trending up about the future. And that, I think, is the kind of situation you want to walk into.
And here's the other thing, is I think that this matters because this can buy you some more rope. If you win 10 games, they'll throw a parade for you. You know what I mean? Like, if you win 10 games, like, you might get an extra couple of years.
True. But you know, Rex Ryan did say that when he went to Buffalo, and that imploded. So
yeah. Okay. Third one on the list, Green Bay.
I say Green Bay's top three.
Okay. Bet?
I would say it's a strong one, and because you have one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now. Granted, you only have him for a few more years, but I think the opportunity, I think a lot of people would jump at the opportunity to work with Aaron Rodgers.
I'm a little afraid of this one.
Okay.
Because I just see what happened with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
And I just think that there is potential for things to, it's become so Aaron Rodgers-centric there that I just think that there's more potential for things to go wrong there than people give it credit for. I still think it's attractive. I think Brian Gutekunst is going to be a good general manager. You've got two first-round picks. Like, that's a good thing. I don't think the talent's great right now.
It's not. Yeah, it's behind definitely the Bears and the Vikings in the division.
Right, you're competing with Matt Nagy and the Bears, who look like they've got it rolling now. And, you know, like you said, the Vikings have been a contender the last few years. This is part of it. I think you have to be comfortable with a lot of things. The other thing is 10 wins there isn't a success.
Right.
Like, so if you're a young head coach and this is your first shot, and
there's no cushion for you there.
Right. Like, it's like, because here's the thing, right? Like, so say you have a bunch of injuries and you go 8-8. Well, you're going to be in the hot seat in 2020 then, right?
Right.
Because, and it's not because the Packers haven't been patient in the past. They've absolutely been patient in the past. It's, well, shoot, the clock's ticking on Aaron. Mm-hmm. Like, so we've got to we got to figure this out. You know what I mean? Like, so I think there are challenges there. I also think this is why, like, this is to me, like, this is the opening that I think Josh McDaniels could wind up in, because they don't have that. It is such a unique challenge having to coach somebody like Aaron Rodgers. Like, and I know that sounds funny, like, oh, it's hard to coach the greatest quarterback, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. The problem is that, and Jenny, I know you've talked to people about this, there is an anxiety to coaching someone like that. There is an anxiety to coaching somebody like a Brady or a Manning, where it's like, how do you give that guy new information? How do you challenge that guy? How do you make that guy not bored listening to you? Because that guy has already seen and done everything.
Right.
That's a really hard thing, you know? And so that's why I think Josh is uniquely qualified, because you're not projecting him into that. Like, that he's done that. That's been his job. Adam Gase is another one. You're not projecting that with him. He's done that. So I think for specific coaches, it could be great, because it's like, all right, like, I've got 5 years of Aaron Rodgers, and that's a 5-year runway to find the next guy. I think if you're not a guy like that, it could be really, really hard.
Yeah, and there's very few coaches that you wouldn't be projecting into the role. It's the reality of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there are very few players like that.
Correct. Right.
Okay, opening number four. Let's go to Denver. Good opening, bad opening?
I think, you know, it's – I think the challenge of working with Elway has to be considered here.
I think it's kind of maybe kind of similar to Green Bay, knowing that your number one task, the number one task for this head coach is known, and that's working with Elway to find that next quarterback.
Right.
And that is, again, a daunting task.
And I think, and I'm sure you've heard the same stuff I've heard, Jenny, it is challenging working with Elway's hard to work for. Like, he's tough on people. The expectations are very, very high there. Like, I don't know. I remember, like, the whole idea of Vance being in trouble is, like, you kept hearing, like, these stats, right? Like when you talk to people there, you kept hearing these stats. And I don't think, like, I mean, look, I think it's best for both sides that Vance and the Broncos separated here, because I think Elway was out on Vance, like, November of 2017, right? Like, so it'd just be a stay of execution at this point.
Right.
But you kept hearing these stats, and it was like, well, we haven't had back-to-back losing seasons in X amount of years, and this would be the first time we've had back-to-back 10 loss seasons. You just kept hearing all of these different things, and it's like, wow, like, you hired a coach with you hired a coach with, like, 1 year of coordinating experience. Like, he's a projection, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you're immediately, like, when he gets into that, you're immediately holding him to, like, the Mike Shanahan standard.
Yeah. I mean, and that's like, I mean, that's the problem with head coach hiring, because unless they've done it before, it almost always is a projection. The skill set that you're asked to do is different from anything you've done before.
Yep.
And, you know, it wasn't even just the, like, the stats surfacing, you know, it was also just like Elway's public comments, right? I mean, it was very clear. You knew where
so
he
open
stood.
About it.
And that's a tough spot for a coach to be in, especially when, you know, you're dealing with a roster where the quarterback decisions have been flawed. And, you know, ever since the putting together the Super Bowl roster, the roster building has been flawed. And you could argue that, yes, that won them a Super Bowl, but that was not a strong long-term roster building plan too. So, you know, I think that's a tough spot to be in. I would say, but there, I think there are worse ones, but it's definitely, you know, in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, it can be a great place to win.
Yeah.
Like, and I think like, you're going to have resources. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have resources, but it's, you know, you have to win quick.
The ownership situation is also, you know, very unstable.
Yes, that is definitely up in the air. That definitely is a negative to this job. And also, you know, going back to the stats that you were saying, you know that Elway, like, keeps those in his head and has them at the drop of a hat. And, you know, whether or not you like it as a head coach, that's your standard. You're going to be held to, you know, beating these stats that Elway has up in his head.
Yeah, so. No question. Okay, number five, I think? Five. Or six,
five.
Tampa.
I think that Tampa Bay is I grew up in Tampa Bay. We'll put this, you know, put that on the record. The weather is not great in Florida, but as a head coaching job, the team is young for the most part. They'll get rid of DeSean Jackson, or they won't. You know, he'll leave. He won't be there next year. Yeah. You got one more year working with Jameis. Overall, when the team is healthy, it's young, but that is a team that is not on a positive track right now. They ended on a tough note. They've been losing haven't made the playoffs in their last 10 seasons. You know, that's going to be a hard place where you kind of got to come in and pick up the guys and inject that optimism into them that they've been lacking for the last several years. You know, none of their head coaches have, you know, their last three or four head coaches haven't lasted more than three seasons. I mean, that's going to be a hurdle to get over. That's going to be a tough place.
Jenny?
I do not like this opening because I do not like Jameis. You know, if you had a different feeling about Jameis, perhaps, but I think it would be very hard to have a different feeling about Jameis. He's not a quarterback that you really can trust in any aspect of the job. And so I just think that I think I would put this last, even despite, you know, they do have some young talent, but a lot of teams have some young talent.
I don't think like it's not so much the Jameis thing bothers me a little bit, but the one thing about Jameis is that he's not going to be your guy. Like he doesn't have to be your guy. Like, you come in, you have no investment in him. And so the team's going to spend $21 million on him next year, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they're not going to draft one. And if there's one you really like, then maybe you draft him. And now you're pulling multiple levers. So maybe you fall back in love with Jameis. Maybe Jameis miraculously grows up because his back's against the wall. Whatever. Maybe that happens. I doubt it. Maybe it happens. But I don't think the Jameis thing's as horrible, because I don't think it as horrible as some people think it is, because I don't think in the last year of his contract, I don't think that prevents you from going and drafting one. Like, I think you could still draft one. The thing that bothers me about this job is that you've got a partner, a general manager who's fighting for his job. And that to me is an issue, because if things really go haywire next year, well, then maybe you're on the hook too, because maybe then it's like, God, we got to blow this thing up completely, you know? And so that's where I certainly see, again, like, I've heard that they want somebody to create some buzz because they've got the empty seat problem down there and everything else. Like, so, you know, it makes
me. Do you think that Jason Light would let the next coach draft a quarterback?
I don't know if it'll be up to him. I mean, if say they go get Mike McCarthy, okay? If they go get Mike McCarthy, could this turn into Buffalo a couple of years ago where Doug Whaley is the sitting general manager, but Sean McDermott's really running the show, and then after the draft they make a change? Like, I don't think it's impossible that we're going to see some general manager changes after the draft. And I think part of that depends on who winds up in these positions, you know? And so, I mean, look, I think part of it was in Buffalo was – the ownership really liked Sean McDermott. And I was like, wow, like, this guy's doing things a lot differently. And then, you know, over time, they wind up making the decision, like, we need to get a guy to pair with this guy. So I think that, like, from that perspective, like,
that's a good point.
You know, like, I think some of these, and it depends, like, you know, you're going to have some guys who are going to come in, and you could have like Zach Taylor, who's 35 years old, coming in, right? And, like, you're not going to let him pick a general manager if you hire him, right? But if it's Mike McCarthy, like, now all of a sudden it's like you've got a Super Bowl winning coach in the building, and now you could be talking about something different. So that's just that level of instability, that's what bothers me. Like, it's not so much Jameis, because Jameis could be gone in a year. Like, that doesn't you're not in year two or three with him. Like, you're already way down the road with him. It's sort of the instability, the potential instability that bothers me there. Okay, number five, Miami.
Miami just seems like they can't decide
number
what
six,
they're doing.
Number six, sorry. Not five. Six, right?
They say six. Five? I think that's six, yeah. Okay. Miami hasn't counting's really been able to decide what they're doing, right? The last few years, they wanted to try to, you know, work toward the ultimate goal of winning a Super Bowl ball and not sacrificing seasons. And then Stephen Ross essentially said, you know, if we kept Gase, he would have wanted to try to win this year, and we just sort of want to start fresh. So I guess maybe they're going all in on that. But the yo-yoing back and forth between for the direction of the team, I think, is unsettling to me, you know.
So you're out on it?
I would rank it in the bottom two or three.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good opening, mostly because it's a team that has lacked an identity for many years, at least, I think. And it's just, you know, like Jenny was saying, there's just no real, I'm not sure what the direction is down there.
Yeah.
And I think that might be hard for a new head coach to go into.
I'm actually like slightly encouraged by what the owner did. I'm slightly encouraged by it because I think like the issue there was like largely between Gase and Tannenbaum. And I really thought, like, at this time last week, if you had asked me at this time last week, he's going to pick one. You know what I mean? Like, and I thought it was Gase. Like, I think he's going to pick one. And the people that I've talked to in that organization speak so, like, no matter what side of all of this, they all speak so highly of Chris Greer.
I agree with
that. They speak so highly of Chris Greer. And then you talk to other people around the league, the scouts that are on the road and see him at schools and all that sort of stuff. And they all speak highly of Chris Greer. And so the one thing that encourages me about this is that this was not the owner storming into the office. This doesn't feel to me like this was the owner storming into the office and firing everybody. The fact that he made that decision, because I thought it was likely going to be Greer and Gase, and like with Gase having all the power that he had before. I think the fact that he like was able to assess his situation and say, like, there's the guy that's the unifier. There's the guy that's, like, respected. There's the guy that's, like I don't know. I look at that decision that he made there, and I'm actually, like, really encouraged by that. Like, I think that that actually shows that he was, like, actually looking at what was happening and, like, made a decision based on facts instead of just what's out there or, just reacting to the way they lost to Buffalo or anything like that.
Yeah, and that's true. And, you know, I've heard the same things about Greer. I agree like that he's well-liked by scouts and is very collaborative, and I think he's a smart guy. And we haven't really seen what he's done when it's all his show. So, you know, that's a fair point, you know.
I just think it's like at least show – like I don't think Stephen Ross would have done that 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I think 5 years ago – he sees guys fighting, and he sees the issues in the office. He comes in and he fires everybody. Mm-hmm. So that's just...
I think Miami is the one place where I'm not surprised the GM did not get fired. There were a lot of situations where I was like, oh, the head coach is gone, but the GM's still there. You know, Tampa and whatever, a couple other places. But Miami is one place where, to me, it makes sense that Greer is still there.
Okay. Number seven, Arizona.
Arizona is very middle of the pack for me. There's a lot of problems in Arizona, but the expectations are low as well, which is good for a fresh head coach.
You have the same, you know, sort of issue we mentioned in Tampa with the GM fighting for his job. And then, you know, the one and done situation is always stressful. They do have, you know, they have a quarterback. You know, it depends if you like the quarterback or not. I know Rosen was polarizing entering the draft, but now you have more information. You have, you know, however many games he started of information. I don't hate it, but I do think that there's still the concern of, you know, the general manager now on his third head coach.
The number one draft pick is not bad.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Like having the number one pick, I think, matters because I think there is a scenario. There's a scenario out there where Dwayne Haskins or Daniel Jones or someone, because I like 3 years ago at this point, no one thought Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were going to go number one or number two overall.
Right.
Then you had two teams trading up to take them there. So I think there's certainly – that can always happen with quarterbacks, right? Like it's always possible that that happens. And if that is the situation, then all of a sudden it's, well, we can either sit here and take Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams, or we can turn around and we can trade the pick and we can get a lot for it. And so I think there are some things about it that structurally that I like. A lot depends, again, what you think of Josh Rosen, because I don't think – I don't feel like it's as consensus as – like Sam Darnold is absolutely a positive in, with the Jets, right, with the Jets job. Baker Mayfield is absolutely a positive with the Browns job. I don't feel like there is as much of a consensus across the NFL that Josh Rosen makes Arizona a great job. And the problem is that, like, if you don't like Josh Rosen, well, are you going to be able to move on from him? Like, say I say I'm a coach and I don't, I think Josh Rosen's just okay. Like, are you going to be able to go in that room and say, you know what, let's trade Rosen and let's take one of the quarterbacks for the first pick? Like, it's messy because of that, you know?
Right. And it's, and it's not necessarily a great year to have the first pick either, because if there isn't a quarterback, I know your point, yes, quarterbacks often rise late, but if there isn't a quarterback that everyone likes and you aren't taking a quarterback, then it's a bad year to have, because then you just get a defensive player, which is great, and that's fine, but then it's like, you know, Clowney, for the Texans,
Yep. I just think it's complicated. Okay, the last one, this one's interesting. The Cincinnati Bengals, and... I think Vance Joseph's going to be in the mix there. They've always leaned on familiarity, so they got a couple guys in-house too, and Bill Lazor and Darren Simmons who are going to get a look. What do you guys think of this one?
I feel mediocre about it.
Yeah.
It's middle of the pack.
It's got to be the right guy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a mom-and-pop shop in a good way and a mom-and-pop shop in a bad way. Okay?
Yeah.
It's a mom-and-pop shop in a good way in that you've got ownership that is not going to be wrapped up in what all of us or anyone else is saying about the organization. So you don't need to deal with like some of the volatility that a lot of these other organizations have to deal with. It's also a place where there's great loyalty. And I feel like that organization, for the most part, people who work there like working there, and that there's a good mix because it's smaller, right? So I feel like there's the good parts of being a mom and pop shop. There's also the bad parts of being a mom and pop shop, which is like the scouting staff is really small and the coaches are going to have to be on the road in the spring looking at prospects. And Marvin Lewis fought for over a decade to get an indoor facility built and he couldn't get that done, you know? And so like there are certain, I think that it's an interesting job because I think that you're going to have like a lot of say in scouting, which I think a lot of coaches want. They want to have at least a say in the way all of that goes. I think it's, you know, there's loyalty there. There's a lot of, I just think there's a lot of good things about, like, a lot of things that are good that you would associate with, like, mom and pop. There are also a lot of bad things you'd associate with being mom and pop.
I remember a couple weeks ago on the podcast, Connor was talking about how, you know, the Cincinnati job is, you know, this was 6 weeks ago, is one of the more attractive ones because it's a place where if you want to raise your family in Cincinnati, there's a chance you'll be there for 10 years or more based on Marvin Lewis. So that's a benefit, I guess. To
right.
Some. I don't
know. I think there's also like the factor you're going to have to be comfortable too with not only Mike Brown, but also his kids, because I think there's a pretty good chance that in the near future, Katie Blackburn and Polly Brown are going to wind up running the team a little bit more so than they have, because Mike Brown, I think he's 83. All right, so we're going to pick the games now. Again, I think this is as good a slate of wild card games as we've had in forever. And I think I would look at like half the teams. I think the four teams that are playing on Sunday have like a halfway legitimate shot to get to Atlanta. So let's start with the Saturday games. The early Saturday game, Houston, Indianapolis. Who do you guys got?
I got Colts on the road.
Jenny?
Colts.
I'm going with the Colts on the road, too. I think that the Houston issue at corner is what gets them there. Second game on Saturday, Seattle, Dallas.
Seahawks. Picking both upsets there.
Yeah. I want to pick the Cowboys because the Seahawks... makes me uneasy, the Seahawks being away from home. I'm going to go with the Seahawks, too. Mm-hmm. Early game on Sunday, the Chargers and the Ravens. I think this one's fascinating because this is the first time like that Navy-style offense that Baltimore is running. It's the first time that they're going to have seen a team twice.
Twice within a few weeks.
Right. So who you have?
Chargers.
Same, Chargers.
God, this is so boring.
Road
teams. We haven't picked a home team yet, right?
No.
Okay. And then the last one, the Super Bowl champions, the Eagles going into Soldier Field against the Bears.
Chicago.
Chicago.
Okay. I'm a Bear leaver too.
Finally picked a home team.
Okay. All right. So we finally pick a home team. We got three road teams. Each of us have three road teams. This is the most boring pick segment ever.
No conflict.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Connor's not here for the fantasy updates, so I guess we can do quick fantasy updates. I lost my championship game because I had Josh Gordon and Cam Newton, and timing with those guys was a little inopportune, and you guys were both losers on championship weekend, too.
Everyone in this room, including Connor, whose spirit is in this room, lost in the finals. So my earlier claim about turning this into a fantasy football podcast, I actually feel like I'm the one that doomed this, because every week that I sort of like was feeling myself on the pod about my fantasy team, I went on to lose the next week. So I take responsibility for everyone's losses.
Well, thank you, Jenny. I appreciate it. We'll see you guys.
It's on me.
We'll see you guys next week. Okay, we're going to get to your questions in just 1 second. But first, I want to tell you guys about Robinhood. I recently just signed up for it. It's fantastic, guys. It's an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Simple and intuitive. It's got a clear design with data presented in an easy to digest way. So look, guys, I want to try to get you guys in on this. So just tell you some of the values of downloading the app that I've been able to reap. First, the cost. There's no commission fees here. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees at all. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Second, the design of it, it's so easy to use. It's easy to understand. The charts, the market data, all of that's right there. You can place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. And the Robinhood web platform also allows you to view stock collections. So that's like your 100 most popular, your sectors, your entertainment, your social media, categories like female CEOs, all of that's right there for you. And you get analyst ratings of buy, hold, and sell for every stock. You can learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks and trade favorite companies with a personalized news feed. And you get custom notifications for price movements, so you never miss the right moment to invest. So this is for you guys, okay? Robinhood is giving my listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. All you got to do, you can sign up at Breer. That's my last name, Breer.Robinhood.com. I'm telling you guys, my dad was a stockbroker. My dad worked at Merrill Lynch back in the 70s and 80s. My dad still trades stocks. And this is the way to do it here. That's why I signed up for it. One more time, that is Breer.com or Breer.Robinhood.com. All right, we'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday, usually this week it's on Wednesday because of the holiday, I put the call for questions out on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get an answer here on the pod and you get a like. So that means I hit that little heart there. You get a like on Twitter. We're going to start question number one. This is from Jay Hoyt. That's at Jay Hoytsta. And this is going to tie into a question that I also got from Donald Parrish. That's at Donald Parrish, GA. Hoyt's question is, if McDaniels and Flores leave New England, who do you see Belichick replacing them with? Parrish's question is, how much offseason upheaval do you expect in New England, and is it at all contingent on how they fare in the playoffs? I do not think it's contingent on how they fare in the playoffs. I do think there's a chance that both coordinators get jobs. I don't think either will hesitate to take one, because I think that there is a feeling there that there is going to be a lot of change this offseason. Structurally, there has to be. They've got seven guys. The top seven guys in their salary cap for 2019 are 29 years of age or older. The top five of those guys account for $77 million on the salary cap. Additionally, they only have five players left from the 16 and 17 draft classes, and those are your third and fourth year players, your guys who should be still on rookie deals but playing like vets. There are a ton of logistical challenges there. I think both McDaniels and Flores realize it might be right to strike while the iron's hot. And so I think there's a chance both of them are gone. If McDaniels is gone, the name you've heard most is Chad O'Shea. The question, I think, would be whether or not Chad O'Shea is capable of coaching the quarterback. I wouldn't be totally shocked if Bill maybe reaches into the past and maybe brings back a guy like a Charlie Weiss, somebody who has experience coaching Brady. Again, we talked about the challenge in coaching Rodgers. That obviously exists for Brady. If there is a change on the defensive side, or if Flores were to leave, I think that a name to watch would be the defensive line coach, Brendan Daly. Question number two from Tiny King, that's at King Tiny 81. Who goes first overall right now, Allen or Bosa? That's Josh Allen, the linebacker from Kentucky, Nick Bosa, the defensive end from Ohio State. I think you're asking the wrong question. I don't think Josh Allen would be in the discussion for number one right now. I think it would be more Quinnen Williams from Alabama or Nick Bosa from Ohio State. I think both those guys will be in the mix to be the number one overall pick. The scouts I talked to, at least the way they see it, they see Williams and Bosa on that super elite tier, and then there being a little bit of a drop-off till you get to the next ones. And the interesting thing about this year's draft class, what you're hearing is there may not be a whole lot of difference between the 5th and 25th picks, which means it's a good year to be in the top two or three picks. Probably not the best year to be in the back half of the top 10. Question number three from Jerry Delaney. That's at Jerry DNY. Does Pittsburgh or the Chargers have plans to draft a quote unquote quarterback of the future? Both those teams are in the window where they would draft one. We've seen the Steelers spend some draft capital on that position the last couple of years with Josh Dobbs and Mason Rudolph. I certainly think if there's a guy that they really like, that this would be a year where they would do it. And at the bottom of the first round, if you're presuming that Justin Herbert going back to school pushes Dwayne Haskins and Daniel Jones up, you'd be talking about somebody like a Will Greer. I'm not sure that a Will Greer or a Drew Lock or one of these guys is worthy of a first round pick, but certainly I think those teams would be in play to take a quarterback on the back end of the first round. Question number four, this is from Cole Phelps. We've got two questions from Cole Phelps. At Adam Automatic Prince, his first question, which wildcard team advances the furthest? I would say of the teams playing this weekend, the team with the potential to get the furthest would be the Los Angeles Chargers. I just like the way they're built. I like their quarterback situation. I like the balance in their roster. I could see them losing to the Ravens on Sunday. I also could see them advancing to the championship round. I could see them coming up and popping the Chiefs in the second round. We already saw them win at Arrowhead once. I don't think it's impossible that they get to Atlanta. And so I'm going to go with the Chargers on that one. Your second question, Cole, thank you for the two questions. I try not to pick two guys at once, but I already did it, so I'll go through with it. Cole asks, do you think the Antonio Brown situation will impact Le'Veon's free agency in any way, i.e. is the system that's broken in Pittsburgh or is it the players themselves? No, the system is not broken in Pittsburgh. The fact that Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell lasted together as long as they did is proof that the system is working. They have always had the battleship commander type of head coach that has allowed them to cast a wider net in talent acquisition. Guys like Mike Tomlin, Bill Cowher, Chuck Knoll, their ability to handle big personalities is what allows them to build the roster the way that they have. And so I do not think it's evidence that the system is broken. I do think that guys like Brown and Le'Veon would have a harder time existing in other places. But I don't think Antonio's situation creates this window into who Le'Veon Bell is. I think teams already know who Le'Veon Bell is. He's a little bit aloof. He's a little different. He's not going to be a team leader. Like, he's going to come in and he's going to be a really good player, and anything you get beyond that's a bonus. So I don't think it's evidence of much of anything. I think it's evidence that the system really has worked because they've been able to handle big personalities like that simultaneously over an extended period of time. And the final question for the week, and this is another Antonio Brown question. I wanted to get to two of them because I figured that it would make sense to do – this is six, right? I think this is six. It would make sense to do two of them. Because it's the biggest story of the week, we weren't able to address it off the top. What would Antonio Brown's value be if he was traded before or on draft day? I don't think Antonio Brown's got great value because of his age and because of everything that you'd be taking on with him. Now, the money part of it isn't the biggest issue in the world. In fact, if you want to look at what top receivers, guys like Mike Evans and Sammy Watkins and Odell Beckham got, I don't think the cash issue is that big a deal. You'd be bringing in a guy who you know, is going to be making, and I'm looking at the cash right now, $15 million next year, $11.3 in 2020, and $12.5 in 2021. Those are actually pretty manageable numbers. I mean, you are talking there about a cash outlay of about, I think, $39 million over the next 3 years. $13 million a year is not much for an Antonio Brown. I think it's going to be tough to get value of him because of all the water under the bridge. And because you know the Steelers are going to be taking an enormous hit on, from a salary cap perspective if they do get rid of him. And so I think he is, again, he will be on opening day of next year, 31 years old, and there is a lot of history here. I think you probably get maybe a day two pick for him. So that's all we got for today. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we welcome your feedback. We want your feedback. You can get it to me on Twitter at Albert Breer, on Facebook at Albert R. Breer, on Instagram at Albert underscore Breer. And always remember to listen to all the MMQB NFL podcasts. We're all on one feed now. So you can listen to the gambling podcast. You can listen to Gary and Andy on Mondays and Wednesdays. And you can listen to us, me and Jenny and Connor and sometimes Bet. It's all there in one feed for you. You can get it on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week, we will be looking back at Wildcard Weekend and ahead to Divisional Playoff Weekend. We'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.